Ja, gute Wach, Julian Chöves Halvaris. Ciao, mit Tochen Perik Dalin. We'll start again from Aval Perush. If someone has the English, I'll find it. If not, then I think you'll be fine without a sefer anyways. So, Aval Perush HaChelek HaShlishi. We're moving into a discussion about a whole different area of life, about applying bitachon to a whole different area of life. Spent a lot of time on parnasa and everything that comes along with it. Now we're moving into a different area, what we might call the interpersonal area of life. Perush HaChelek HaShlishi, the third area is Inyanei Ishtay Ubanav Ubnei Beis. Everything relevant to your wife, your spouse, your children, your family, your relatives, your friends, your enemies, your various associates, and your relationships with the people who are above you or below you in various hierarchies, whether employer, employee, teacher, student, government person, and subjects, etc. There's all these different types of dynamics. So the way we apply bitachon in these areas is kasha hasaper, as we'll discuss. So he starts by breaking it down to its elements. The broad sense, first it breaks down to two general categories in terms of your interpersonal life. In the broad way, obviously there's different degrees, but either you are a loner, a person without family, lives by themselves, or a person who's part of a big family circle. In other words, you either have a life which is basically solitary or a life that involves many people. So we began this last week. We'll quickly move through it. So he starts with the category of the loner, the person who's basically living in solitude. So as we noted last week, in a general way, we say that objectively speaking, the ideal picture is for a person to be living surrounded with family, to be part of a family, to have a life full of people. And we think of the loner, it's not the type of life we're looking for, and it's a less ideal kind of life. But the Chavis HaVavis Kedalkoi is striving to show us now how whatever, this is exactly where bitachon comes in. Hashem puts you into the life circumstances that he chose, that he tells us, he gives us general directives in terms of you to try to marry, want you to try to raise a family, etc. But at the end of the day, like with other areas, that means that you're supposed to do yours, you're supposed to try. And then Hashem decides exactly what he wants your setup to be. All in line with, we go back to the bigger picture of bitachon. What is your neshama's very specific role? What is best for Hashem wants to get you in your ultimate true existence in Olam Haba? And here, it very much varies. You have the person Hashem decides that, we have to realize this is an important point to make. Person is in Shidduchim. The years start going by, and the person starts getting anxious, to dejected, to despairing. And sometimes there can be a sense of, so I'm just not going to be living a full life. It's kind of like, all these years are being wasted. So here's where the Chavis kicks back in, back to the broad subject of Bitachon. You're doing yours, you're doing yours. But ultimately, there is no wasted. Whatever your situation in life is, whatever circumstances Hashem decides to give you, there's no b'dieved. This is perfect what Hashem has in mind for you. Whether or when people are put through the great test of Chalila childlessness, which is also something that we view as a bracha to have children, certainly to raise a family. This is what we're aiming for. This is what Hashem wants us to aim for. And it's very painful to be in the other situation. But here is where we want to distinguish between painful and the sense that I'm just not able to do my tafkid right. I'm just not able to really live the life that a Jew is meant to live. And here's what the Chavos HaLevavot says, no. What is the life that a Jew is meant to live? Hashem has a very individual plan for each person. And for a person to realize that, well, this is what Hashem chose for me. Now it is painful. I have to contend with the pain. But not a sense of my life is being wasted. It certainly is not. This is exactly, whether it's about waiting or if Hashem decides that it should be without, this is where your greatness lies. This is where your neshama will reach its fulfillment. And that's where we come back to the bitachon issue. Question, yes.
If Chas v'Shalom you put into a situation where you're childless, are you to assume that that is what your tafkid in life is, or are you supposed to adopt?
If a person is put into a place of childlessness, so should you assume that that's your tafkid, or should you look to adopt? Okay, so this is a great example of, I will reword the question. Should I assume that my tafkid is to go through life without? Or should I assume that where Hashem is directing me is toward the direction of adoption? Maybe there's a neshama out there that's waiting for the right home. So this is individual. Like everything else, it's like a person without parnasa. A person without parnasa. So the question is, then a specific job offer comes up. Right? So here the question is, should I be taking this job or not? We can't give a broad answer, yes, if the job comes up, takes it. It's going to depend on your individual circumstances. It's going to depend on the nature of the job and how the two come together. So in a broad way, that's what we're going to say. But you know what? Let's go a little further, and then we'll see again. We're not going to be able to give an answer. The bottom line answer is that it'll depend. It'll depend. Certainly, it's a situation that puts you in a position that there's all kinds of things that other families can't do that you can do. Whether it's adoption, whether it's involving yourself in different types of projects that the tzibur needs, chesed, other things that people who are raising a family can't do. There's all kinds of different ways that adoption is one example of such a thing. But also, it isn't even necessarily that. Sometimes it's really an issue of a person just staying in their own life and appreciating what are the opportunities that this sort of life presents me with, as he's going to go on and say. And it might not even mean filling your life up with objective activity. Like, you have to be involved in something, either adopting or becoming the head of a chesed organization. I have to have something to show for myself. Not necessarily. Sometimes it's about the inner growth that involves. Sometimes it's about what you're going to do with your relationship without children. So it's there isn't a straight answer to it, but this is the way to be thinking. How does Hashem want me to proceed in this situation? And let's see. Question.
A situation where you're challenged, and then you can go and actively think a remedy to that. Okay? But if something is presenting itself, like it fell out of the mind, like the job is offered to you, maybe it just presents itself and you should go forward and you don't know where it's going to take you, but it presents itself.
Well, there's no question that when something, the question is, let's say, when I get to the job, what to other situations where a person suddenly something comes his way, we definitely take that as a sign that you should be looking into it in a serious way. It's likely to be, yes, a simin min hashamayim that this is for you. But the very fact that it presented itself isn't automatically the answer that it's for you, meaning you still have to go through the process of seeing, is this something that fits the other criteria of the proper ishtadlus in terms of avodas Hashem? Like, let's use the example of a job. It's just easier to talk about, right? Person is without a job and desperate. And then a job comes his way that's going to require him to expose himself to much lower moral standards. So here, on the one hand, you could say, well, it's a simon min hashamayim that this is what Hashem wants you to do now. Do you want that challenge? On the other hand, you might say, no, the challenge is exactly that. That as desperate as you are, and as much as you need a job, to recognize that this is a test. Am I capable of seeing this, saying, no, this is going to get me to a bad place spiritually, and therefore saying, no. Right? Yes, it mamish came your way. It has that look of something that was sent in Hashemayim, but it could have been sent in Hashemayim for the purpose of you turning it down. So that's why, yes, the fact that something comes your way is certainly reason to address it. But you still have to go through the processes of weighing it in terms of how it works with your individual circumstances. Okay, so now I want to add, we're going to get to that, you know, right now the Chavetz Chaim is saying in a very black and white kind of way, either you're a loner or you have family, right? But as we know, there are many, many more variations. A person did get married and then discovered that very many unusual challenges in the marriage. They're also, we're going to have to see, that's an area of figuring out, okay, what does Hashem want for me in this situation? This is something that Hashem imposed on me, not to just be with a feeling of, oh boy, I just made a mistake. No. Again, like we said with other things, you went through your hishtadlus in a reasonable, responsible way, and this is the situation you're in now. That's a tafkid. Sometimes, the spouse is wonderful, or as in most cases, in all interpersonal relationships, there's going to be the ups and the downs. And the children, there's going to be these tests, right? Or in the broader family, whether your own extended family, or your spouse's extended family, the idea is that with all these things, you want to approach it with a mindset of bitach, never with a situation of, oh boy, I was really dumped into a lousy situation. Whatever it is, every situation has its opportunities and its challenges. And we approach it with the understanding that this is where Hashem put me because this situation exactly is what's going to get me to exactly where my neshama needs to get. I just have to figure out how to approach it. So let's see. So we come back to the loner. So as we discussed last week, Yetzivusay Beleikov Beis Ishtayim Musay. V'yivtach alav b'dirusay. So he says, you're a loner, so make yourself not a loner. Let your society be Hashem. Let your family be Hashem. We talked about this last week, so I'm not going to elaborate on it now, but it deserves that elaboration. The understanding that it provides the opportunity to create a much more intimate and intense and real relationship with Hashem. Right? We spoke about Leah last week. So I'm not going to repeat that arichus now, but we'll just say in short that this is point number one. He's saying, note the opportunities of such a life. One is that, yes, you have that chance to develop a much more intimate relationship with Hashem. This is how David HaMelech became David HaMelech. David HaMelech became David HaMelech because of the fact that he was an outcast, that he was spurned by his family, and he was basically sent off to the fields with the sheep. He grew up as a loner. Afterwards, he was thrust into a very not loner kind of situation as the king of the Bnei Israel, right? But he reached his heights because of his years in solitude. And on the contrary, when he was made king of Israel, he bought that ability to be able to live in solitude, even when he is all of a sudden now part of a very, very intense social circle. I don't know if you call it social, but you know, the king of Klal Yisrael, to be able to still carry that ability to live in solitude even in such a situation. But that's the advantage. The ruchniyistic advantage of solitude is the ability to focus and really make a real deep, intimate relationship with Hashem. So that's number one. Make Hashem your family, the family that you're missing. And now he brings in another very interesting perspective. He says, and you're an unconnected person. You're living by yourself. You're not surrounded by a supported family circle. So get your support also from Hashem. Now, this is not the same point that we said before. Before we're talking about relationship, before we talked about having, this is a tall order, but the ability to really create a rich tamamish feel, reach a place where I feel like I have plenty of, well, I won't say people, but the equivalent, perhaps even more in my life. I have Hashem. But now he's talking about the aspect of the support system. V'yala libe, and he makes a very interesting point here. Think about the following. Geirus ha-nefesh ba'olam hazeh. Think about how really every person is a neshama who is a stranger, a loner, in foreign territory in olam hazeh. V'chi'anshi ha'oretz kamoi geirim ba. And that really everybody on earth are like lost strangers. Kamoi shama ha'kosu. Like the pasuk said, "Kigerim v'toyshavim atem imadi." You are all just strangers on my land. Right? Remember, this is the reason for the mitzvah of Yovel, Shmita. Hashem wants us to be. As we live in Olam Hazeh, we start feeling like Olam Hazeh is our territory. We feel very at home in Olam Hazeh. But Hashem wants us to constantly be reminded that actually this is not your territory. You're like, you know, a person who's waiting at the gate for a flight for an hour, and you suddenly start feeling like, okay, you know, this bench here is my territory, and you're going to start putting up curtains and maybe a nice little flower vase on the other armrest and say, no, this is not your territory. There's millions of people coming and going here. You're moving on very soon. So Hashem tells us, Hashmita, just let go of the land every 7 years. And then Yovel is showing how we really have very limited ownership on the land. Everything just goes back to where it came from. Because Hashem wants us to remember we're just guests, right? A host can shift around the rooms where he's putting people if he wants. So remember, you're just guests here. The land isn't really yours. You want to switch where you're sleeping today with the other person? Fine, but I'm going to come and switch it back when I choose to. So now, this is leading up to that the loner has a certain advantage in really living this way. But let's finish up the next sentence of the Chodesh Havavos before we really bring it out. So it says, V'yachshev b'liboy. Did I tell this story? I feel like I told it recently about how even the grave is temporary. There was a maestro with Rabbi Akiva Eiger. There was a fellow who used to lend with interest in the area. And the Beis Din warned him a few times that he has to desist, and he didn't pay attention. And he was basically just ignoring the Beis Din's warnings, and that's what he did. That's how that was his career. When he died, the Chevra Kadisha didn't want to bury him. Family pushed and this and that. Finally, the Chevra Kadisha said, okay, fine, but for an exorbitant sum. They wanted to charge much, much, much more than they ordinarily charged for a grave. So the family was up in arms. What's this? They came to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger said to the family, he said, look, the Chevra Kadisha is right. So they have to understand something. A grave is a rental. When a person is buried, not going to be there forever. He's there for a few years, and then he's going to get up. There's going to be Tchias HaMeisim. They're charging rental rates. But a person who lent with interest, he's going to be there forever. That's a purchase. A sale is not the same price as a rental. But that's the idea, the real sense that we're just here for a little bit. This is not really our territory. Now, particularly, and this is something that the Chodesh Havavos talks about in a few different places, being surrounded by family gives much more of a sense of being settled in my area, right? Hashem tells Avraham Avinu, base Avicha, that was part of the test. When you live in a place where you're surrounded by family, so you feel well settled, your turf, right? So he says, Yachshav Balimboy, this loner who feels pathetic, who feels lonely, who feels like, look at all these other people who are so well taken care of. He says, think about, Kikon Mishayesh like Kroivimboy. Take this other person, the person who lives across the street, is surrounded by a whole big family of tens of people, and he looks like he's properly set up and well cared for, of so many people he can rely on, whole support system, emotional, material. Think about the fact that in not very long, Yoshuv Nochri Boide, that person is going to be a stranger on his own, meaning once a person moves on to the next stage, and like we said, is interred into the ground, and now he has to approach the Bezdin Shel Ma'ala. He's on his own. There's no pull. His connected brother-in-law is not going to help anything. The whole family support system. He is now navigating his way by himself, completely by himself. And it's going to be an abrupt switch. You know, where's my whole support system? Where are all my connections? Lo yileu kovev v'lo ben v'lo yischar b'ri ma'echa man. All of his children, all of his relatives, it's not going to help now. And nobody's going to be coming along with him to make sure he's okay, make sure he finds his way. So the Chavis HaLavis is telling us that the loner should realize you have an advantage in this sense because you, they're going to have a hard time really living this way. The fact that you're able to live this way already in Olam HaZeh, and to sense that I'm on my own. And either I interact with Hashem or I'm lost. For other people, it's much harder to sense that. I'm comfortably set up. But for a loner, it comes more naturally to realize that. And therefore, the Chavis HaLavis tells us, you have a great advantage because you already have the Olam Haba mindset now. That mindset that you really need in order to navigate things properly toward Olam Haba, you already have that naturally now. You're able to connect to that more naturally now. So realize that that's something to take advantage of. It's an opportunity that a lonely life provides. Okay. And now, he says some bold things that, again, I wouldn't have the nerve to say these things. But look what he says. Now think of some more benefits. You would never tell this to a person who's living lonely. We would also feel guilty thinking this way. But he says, Yachshav achakach, think afterwards, v'stalkus kaved masa'om v'choy v'som v'tzokehem me'alav. He says, yeah, you're looking at the other person with the big family. He says, you have to realize you have a much easier life than him. He's walking around he's encumbered by a lot of burdens, and he's, you know, just can't keep up with everything he has to be doing for everybody in his life. And you have a peaceful life. And he says, think of that as a benefit that Hashem gave you. He says, because now all you have to care for materially is yourself. It's a much simpler business. You have much less responsibilities. You have much less people making demands on you. Nobody. You just have to care for yourself. To support yourself is simple enough. Without having a wife and children, without having a family. And not having a family gives you a more restful life. Enjoy it. Now, certainly, right, we're meant to view having a family as a bracha. Even though we realize, yes, that comes with challenges, but this is the point that the Chavis HaLavis is making. And he's boldly blazing a certain new way of thinking here, because this is not the standard way of thinking. But he's trying to point something out. The standard way of thinking is that the Torah says, marry, raise a family, that's called bracha, etc., etc. But the Chelos HaVavos is saying that, yes, that's the starting point. But in every situation, there has its benefits and its challenges. And don't just stay with, well, since I didn't manage that standard, so I'm just a Nebuch. Learn to see the unique advantages in this way of life, even though people would almost feel like sacrilegious expressing it that way. What, having a family is a burden? Who could say such a thing? Chavis Alvavis can say it. So he's not going to tell this to the married person, but to the unmarried person, he's saying, you should know a spouse can be a nuisance. Now, he's going to talk a different tone when he's talking to the married person. But yes, this is what he's saying to the unmarried person. And he's saying to the unmarried person, realize that children are a burden. Right? But to the other people, we're going to say, appreciate the bracha you have in your life. Look at all your children. But you want a lonely life? And we say to the person with the lonely life, appreciate the benefits of a quiet, restful life. Question.
Not really a question, but I think it gives us another perspective on our single friends who might say, are they, it should, you know, but it's maybe not so.
That's right. Now, I just want to qualify that. We should always look at people, we should be looking to see where do they need our support, right? We do want to take an approach of, when you see someone with a rough life circumstance, it's kind of like you have to think out of both sides of your mouth at the same time. Like we've been discussing, we said that poverty is a pathetic reality to be in. On the other hand, it has all kinds of opportunities for growth, right? So when we meet a poor person, we shouldn't be thinking, oh, wow, here's how he can grow, and here's how he can grow, and here's how he can grow. We should be thinking, what can I do to help him? Right. So when we know of a person who's in a life situation that is objectively less than ideal, our main thought should be, what can I do to make it easier for him? But at the same time, like you're saying, we can be thinking that maybe part of what I can do is to help him gain this perspective. Yeah, right. You have to know how to do that. Don't just come and say, you know what I heard in a shiur last week? You should change your whole way of thinking. No. That's not what we mean.
Understand that Kashbarku gave him
that's right.
It's not a terrible Nebuch, it's just what he's meant perhaps to be, but we still try to help him.
That's right. Each person has their challenges. That's right. Someone else is going to say something. Are you going to ask a question?
Yes, that's what.
Okay. But yes, we are stressing. We are, those of us who are married with children, are eavesdropping on a conversation that the Chavis HaLevavos is having. That isn't really meant for our ears. But okay, we're allowed to do that. Chavis HaLevavos put it out for all of us to see. But that's really what's going on. He's talking to that person. He's having a quiet, a private one-on-one discussion with that person. And we're eavesdropping. For part of the purpose being to really gain this, just the mindset that every situation in life, the chokhmah is to be able to, A, the bitachon mindset of this is what Hashem decided is best for me, and to be able to see what is the bracha in this in my situation. Okay. Now, v'miyemevakesh inyanei achrisoi, and also if this person wants to think about, okay, what can I be doing toward my olam haba? Yeliba yaser reik upanui be'esis by dedusa mibli safek. He says a lot of spiritual growth comes from being able to just focus in solitude. And yeah, you'll be able to do a lot more toward your Olam Haba in a direct kind of way. You'll be able to engage in all kinds of learning, all kinds of different things that most people would never be able to have the opportunity to do. To go to many more shiurim than other people would dream to go to, but just can't make the time. And like we said, to realize, okay, I have an emptier life. What can I do with it? What can I do with it? Here's where the question you raised before, the question of adoption. That would be one way of thinking. Sometimes though, the answer will be no. Let's say, Halila, a childless couple, and I'm just elaborating on the Chavis Alavis. I don't want to, it's not my place to be talking to people who are challenged with other challenges, right? But perhaps sometimes, but if I'm giving a Chavis Alavis, I just try to make sure his message comes across. So I'm doing that with a due inadequate feeling. But sometimes you might say, no, I need to put all my koyches into supporting my spouse in this situation. That's going to be my chesed enterprise. Sometimes that's the true answer. Sometimes we have to realize that could carry a lot of value in and of itself. And I'll convey a point. This is a point that Rabbi Lichtenman made. There's an organization called Bnei Olam. Maybe you've heard of it. Which is there to help and support people who are still waiting for children. And one time a whole group of such fathers came to Rabbi Leib Steinman. He told them like this. He said, you have to realize that you have a very special tafkin. He talked about the psukim, one of the psukim of Elkanah's interactions with Chana Israel. Right? Chana waited 19 years for a child. She went 19 years without a child. And Elkanah took great pains to shower her with attention and love, and that itself caused problems, right? But that's actually a fascinating story to analyze at length. We're not going to do that now, but just one piece. At one point, when Chana was sitting and crying, Elkanah says to her, "Halo anochi toiv lach me'asar habanim. I am better for you than 10 sons." So Rabban Leib Steinman said, what was he expressing here? He said, what he was saying was like this. He understood the emotional void that his life was contending with, that his wife was living with, and he understood that it's his responsibility to fill it. Meaning, every spouse is there to provide their spouse with emotional fuel, right? Perhaps even more important than, I'm not going to say what's more important. We have different. But the emotional fuel greatly is what's at the core of the relationship, right? Each there for the other in that sense. Now, what Elkanah was saying was, since she was missing the joy, right, the fulfillment of a life with children, he had to work 10 times as much to provide all that, And he was apparently saying that he did. Still didn't fill the void. But you get a little bit of an inkling about what kind of couple we're talking about. It's a couple to study. I get so tempted, but okay, not now. But you get a little bit of an idea of what sort of relationship we're talking about. And in those days, it wasn't a theorem. Today, okay, obviously you can't have two wives today. But even more theoretically, if it was legal or whatever, today it would be, we could call it Ritzicha. In those days, it was able to be mamish, fully rounded emotional, emotionally fulfilled relationship in that sort of situation. We're not going to get into that now. So these are things that are outside our frame of reference. Whatever the case is, this is what Elkanah was expressing there. So Rabbi Leib turned to these fathers and he said, this gives you an idea of your job. You have to be able to say, not to be able to say it. Anyone can say it. But you have to be able to really be in that situation. This is something that can be a full-time job. That's something that can take, you know, as many energies or maybe even more energies than going out and founding a chesed organization. So that's why I'm coming back. This is all coming back to the question asked about adoption, is that there's all these different ways of thinking about it, and you have to, a person would have to see in their situation what is their fulfillment going to be in such a in this reality. But that's the idea that the Chavis HaLavdus is giving here. He's saying your space, your headspace, your time is much less filled than other people who are struggling to keep up. View that as an advantage. Now he says, Valkane. He says something interesting here. Borchim mikraveim umibateim elohim, kidei sheifnu liboisam la'avodas elokim. It says the conscientious Ovdei Hashem would leave their families for periods at a time and go to be by themselves in order to really gain that focus. This is what the contemporary term for it is. No, he uses it too. His boididus. Now, it's not really a contemporary term. He's using it also. But just the idea of being by yourself, nothing else going on, just having that focus. It's a very powerful tool in Avodas Hashem. Now, you know, by the time we're finished here, so people are going to be saying, hey, oh boy, so what do I do if I do have a family? Well, we're going to come back to that point. Whatever your situation is, there is greatness and fulfillment there for you in that situation. But this often becomes an issue. You know, when you're stressing one side of the coin, you have to keep saying, well, what about the other side of the coin? So right now we're just on this side of the coin, right? So he says his Baidadus is a very powerful tool in Avodas Hashem. And therefore, people used to do that. People who had families would make a point of going off for periods at a time. In earlier times, right, we know that there were people who used to go to Golos. That this was something that was done. Now, in today's reality, it sounds so much stranger because bear in mind that in earlier times, anyways, that's how life was. People who were working for a living were often away for a week at a time or for months at a time. It was almost the rule. David Gamil used to talk about when he was in Lithuania. He said that was the scene, was that Thursday nights, the men folk would converge on the town. They would come back home, they would be out all week, right? And Thursday nights, they would converge on the town. He described, yeah, very inspiring descriptions of what it looked like in the shuls Thursday nights. But my point just is that this sounds foreign to us. But if we bear in mind that life reality in those days was that very often husbands were away for weeks or months at a time with their wives home. So this was another function that was a part of that life. You had those people who had made a point of going away just for the purpose of gaining that hispoidinus. V'chein haya nevi'im bizman ha-nevuah. He says, this was how nevi'im operated in the time of nevuah. Yoytzim mim oinoysam, nim anesayim, umisboididim l'choyves ha-boyre alim. They would leave their homes, leave civilization, go off into the wilderness, like the contemporary Baididus, just it could be for longer periods of time. Right? And they would engage in that silent meditation, introspection, and connection with Hashem. We see this with Elio, who was probably from the more extreme Nevi'im in this sense. Other Nevi'im didn't do it to that extreme. But this was a part of the lifestyle. It was finding those times to do it for periods at a time. Now, this is a point that I want to make. That, yeah, the Nevi'im, this was often a career of Nevuah, if we'll call it that, entailed that to a large extent. Perhaps you had the very great Nevi'im who were able to do it not this way, but a Navi, as a rule, had to be very much on his own. It was very hard to be a Navi if you were busy interacting with people all the time. And that's why, for example, some of the greatest people, for example, David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, they had, well, just following what it says in Tanakh, one or two or three nevuahs throughout their lifetime. They weren't regular nevi'im. Why? Because life as a king didn't really allow for that. And here's where we also see the other side of the coin, because it's very interesting to note. Every king was guided by a navi. Every king was guided by a navi. David HaMelech was guided by two nevi'im, Nasan and Gad, right? Two nevi'im, Nasan and Gad. If you were just to be asked by today, who is a greater name, David HaMelech or Nelson, Hanavi, God, Hanavi? I think everybody would say, oh, David HaMelech. Because you know what? This is really just bringing out again the other side of the coin. That, yes, that his Boididus brings a person to those levels of Nevoah, which is the height of spiritual activity in Olam Hazeh. Yet, that isn't synonymous with the highest levels of Avodas Hashem. They reached very, very great heights as Nevi'im, and David, through his intense activity as the Melech Yisrael, busy with people all the time, and needed the guidance of a Navi who was completely and purely connected to the spiritual channels, at the end of the day was a greater person. At the end of the day was one of the greatest person, one of the greatest people we have. I'm saying this with caution and with reservation, but higher than most of the Nevi'im we know of. So that's just bringing out the other side of that coin. Exactly, one of the Shiva Raim is one of the four Galgalei HaMerkava, right? Avraham, Yitzchok, Yaakov, and David. Okay, but this is back to that point, to appreciate the opportunities of Hisboidedus. Okay. And Blineder, next week we'll dedicate to Purim. Right? Purim is Tuesday, right? So we'll still meet Sunday, Mitz Hashem. Blineder, next week we'll dedicate to Purim. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to you.